Welcome into the NHL at the Rink podcast. As always, Dan Rosen here, Sean Rourke out there. Sean, I am still recovering a little bit. We're recording this Wednesday morning. I'm still recovering a little bit from a 13-game night. It's a good thing only two tonight because we got 14 more tomorrow. But that was a lot of fun hockey and storylines emerging in the National Hockey League.
World comes at you fast in a short and condensed schedule. It's either feast or famine, right? There's game every night, which is unbelievable. But nights like last night when there was 13 games and tomorrow night when there's 14, I know there's at least one 15-game night on the schedule. They're everything you could want as a hockey fan, right? What do you like about hockey? You're going to find it on a 13-game night. You want to see scoring? Edmonton, Winnipeg. You want to see tight checking? Columbus, Florida. Whatever you want to see. Like, you want to see physical? You're going to find that. So it was a smorgasbord last night, and if you didn't walk away from the table full, shame on you.
Yeah, and you want to see overtime. There were some good overtime games, comeback games. No, it had it all, and we got 14 more on Thursday. We will have Lindy Ruff, the New Jersey Devils coach. He'll be our guest today, so we will get to Lindy shortly. But let's rehash something that happened last week, and it was huge. It kind of was, you know, it's the type of blockbuster in the NHL that you don't see very often, but you love it when you do. The trade between the Blue Jackets and the Jets, and obviously the key parts of that trade, Pierre-Luc Dubois, unhappy in Columbus, got benched. He goes to Winnipeg. And Patrick Laine, who didn't seem to want his future to be in Winnipeg, he goes to Columbus. And Sean, if I can get a rant out of the way here early, I'm going to do it, okay? We haven't seen these guys on the ice yet. We eventually will. They'll be worked into the lineup. I'm getting sick and tired of hearing, will Laine be able to play for John Tortorella? I hate it. I hate it. Mary Gabrick had a terrific run under John Tortorella. Marty St. Louis was awesome under John Tortorella. There are Artemi Panarin was great under John Tortorella. If you play a 200-foot game, if you play the whole ice and you score, John Tortorella is going to love you. If you play the whole ice and you get chances, John Tortorella is going to love you. Patrick Laine is going to go to Columbus, and there might be clashes. There always are with John Tortorella, but it doesn't mean it can't work. Patrick Laine, you just play hard and you play your game. You're going to thrive in that environment. They need a goal scorer. They need one badly. John Tortorella knows that. He's not going to make this guy block shots and do all these things. Patrick Laine can thrive in that environment under, you know, in Columbus. And I just can't stand the argument, you know, the debate there with, can he play for Torts? There'll be a working out period, no question about it. But you play hard and you play your game, you could play for Torts.
All right. Well, first of all, I don't have to worry about you stealing my rant segment anytime soon, man.
Okay. Because I know you probably disagree.
You at least have to get your blood pressure up when you rant. All right. You got to get the blood pressure going.
I told you, I'm still recovering from last night.
You got to give it a little oomph. So all right. I feel safe in my rant segment that I will take it over again next week. But yeah, look, I mean, Tampa Bay won the cup with John Tortorella. Those players, think about some of those players that were on that team. You mentioned St. Louis, LeCavier, guys like that. If you want to be great, you want a coach like John Tortorella. You want somebody who's going to hold you accountable, who is going to say, this is what you need to do to be great. And I believe that Patrick Laine wants to be great. And I believe part of the problem in Winnipeg for him was that he didn't feel that he was being given the opportunity to be great because of the depth they had at forward. He wanted to play all those top minutes. And all of a sudden, you know, there's Scheifele, there's Ehlers, there's all these players, Wheeler, that are taking his ice, what he believed to be his ice time, right? He played with Scheifele, and, you know, after the trade was made, Cheveldayoff, the GM there, said, you know, we looked at it analytically and it didn't work. You know, we couldn't play those two players together. So there goes Laine's opportunity to play first line minutes, right? That's what he wants. He wants to be great. So now he gets to come to Columbus and he gets to be great. Yeah, Torts might yell at him a little bit. Patrick Laine's never been yelled at.
Right.
Right. They're hockey players. You get yelled at, you get benched, all those things happen. Patrick Laine, like, just think about the kid who got drafted, right? And he wanted to go number one. More than any kid I can remember in a long time. Everybody says, oh, it doesn't matter to me. Wherever I go, whoever picks me. Patrick Laine said, I want to go number one. I'm the best kid in this draft. Take me number one. Like, he's never lacked for an enthusiasm to be great. And that's all you need, right? And I think John Tortorella is going to refine that. And John Tortorella is not going to have to motivate Patrick Laine. Patrick Laine is going to motivate himself. He's out of Winnipeg now, and now he has to put his money where his mouth was and say, I wanted first line minutes. I wanted to be the guy. Now you're going to be the guy. Go do it.
And let's flip it around because Pierre-Luc Dubois wanted out of Columbus. Why? I have no idea. He won't say why. He's been asked 1,000 times and won't say it. I'm not going to rant here, but I agreed with John Tortorella in benching him. I thought it was the right move. It was an erosion of his play. That shift was bad. It was bad. He gave no effort, straight legs, goes into the corner, does nothing with it. Did he give up? I don't know. I mean, it was bad. It was a trade me shift. That's what it was. And so he got benched and it became big news. And Torts understood that. And Dubois got his wish. He's now out. Okay. And he's going to go to a team where he's going to have to fight to play first. He's not going to be a first line center because Mark Scheifele is the first line center right there. And I think he can thrive there. And I think he's a very good player, but I think he has a little bit of, shall we say, you know, reputation to trying to think of the right words here. I know on a podcast, I shouldn't have to think of the right words, but I think he's got to repair that a little bit. You know, I think that was a bad ending in Columbus and players see that. Guys understand that when you give up on your team, as Pierre-Luc Dubois did, he's going to have to repair that reputation there in Winnipeg. And I don't think it'll take him a long time if he plays his game, but he's going to have to do that. Paul Maurice is going to give him the opportunity to do that. The Jets are going to welcome in and give him the chance to do that. And he could be a good player for a team that's really rolling right now and has good offense and can produce and all that. And I actually think playing for Torts is really going to help Pierre-Luc Dubois in Winnipeg because he had to play the full ice in Columbus and he's going to have to do that in Winnipeg too.
And you know what? I love Paul Maurice. But Paul Maurice isn't that much different than John Tortorella. Look, he gives better sound bites in his press conference. He's a thrill to
not
talk
all
to.
The time. I enjoy
the give and take you have with Paul. He'll entertain you as he has a press conference. When they made that run to the Western Conference Final a couple of years ago, and I did the Western Conference Final, like that press conference every day was a treat. It was, you know, just a stream of consciousness, and we love it, right? And then you go and you get Torts and you ask him the wrong question and you get the icy stare and you get the three-word answer and all of a sudden, how do players play for Torts? This is horrible. You know, nobody should be treated like this. We're all human. We get treated that way and we're like, oh, well, he's not a good coach. He's too hard on his players. No, Paul Maurice is hard on his players. He's just much nicer about it. and, you know, so it's not like he's going away on vacation. But the thing that I'm dying to see is how they make it all work. As you said last week about a different team trying to be hip and cool, Winnipeg's a wagon right now.
Yeah, they're good.
When you think about how loaded the North is, see, for me, the problem going into this year, and I wasn't sold on Winnipeg, was could they score? They have the best goaltender in the league. And if they could somehow score, they would be okay. They have 28 goals. The only team in the North with Edmonton and Toronto and Calgary and Vancouver all in that conference are the Montreal Canadiens, who have 29 goals and have played a couple fewer games. So Montreal is even more impressive, I think, than Winnipeg is. But Winnipeg is scoring it. And you look at the guys that are doing it. They're guys that are ready to break out. Nikolaj Ehlers has goals in 5 games. Kopp has 9 points.
Lowry's, you know, playing well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So, a lot of guys. Yeah.
So now you're going to – you're going to drop a world-class quasi number one center into that. It's going to be, as long as they can make the chemistry work. And I think they can, although I will say one thing, it had to be a little concerning that some of the conversation coming out of Winnipeg after Laine was traded was that he didn't feel comfortable in Winnipeg and the captain saying that he maybe should have handled things differently. I don't think in a bullying way, just in a communication way with Laine when things went bad, there wasn't really an accountability there. There wasn't a fair and accurate back and forth. These, and I'm not saying this is what the captain said, you know, when the trade happened. Like, I think the chemistry more than the on ice thing is what's really going to determine whether this trade works in Winnipeg.
Yeah, no question about it. And that remains to be seen. And same thing with Columbus. It remains to be seen. But, you know, we love trades like that. And I think it can work for both players. They both didn't want to be where they were, so they got moved. And you're right. I mean, Paul Maurice does it a little nicer maybe than John Tortorella, but he does push his players just as hard as Tortorella. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes. Speaking of this division, the Scotia North division, are the Maple Leafs, I want to hit on the Maple Leafs in a little bit here. Are the Maple Leafs and the Canadiens and maybe the Jets now kind of separating? from the pack? Are they better? Are they, are we looking at those three teams and saying, wow, they are that much better than Edmonton and Calgary and Vancouver?
I don't know. Let's wait and see when Vancouver gets done feasting on Ottawa this week. Right? Like, people were ready to bail off the Titanic in Vancouver after the first five games of the season. Like, what's wrong with them? Why can't they do anything? And then they play Ottawa. You know, Ottawa has to go out there, you know, and travel and everything else that goes on. And that game was a 7-1 shellacking. And you know, everybody got a little healthy. Everybody on except for Pettersson got a little healthy. Mm-hmm. He's got to find his way. But, you know, I think they're going to come back a little bit. Man, Edmonton scares me. Like, it's the same show all over again, right? Like, you look at the top of the standings, and it's McDavid and Draisaitl, 23 points between them, both in the top five. You know, Puljarvi looks a little bit better in his second come around. Yamamoto's been pretty good, but their defense has been ravaged by injuries, and their goaltending's been no good. Like,
they get no secondary scoring.
Yeah.
Their goaltending's been no good. Well, no bottom six scoring. Their goaltending hasn't been good. Their defense is ravaged by injuries. I'm watching that game last night against Winnipeg, and it seemed to me every time the Jets got the puck in their own zone, they gathered the puck in their own zone, it was a quick up, quick out rush chance almost every single time. And you can't live like that. You can't live like that, especially in a division where, like we said at the start of the season, there are six teams in the division that believe that they're playoff teams right now. And then there's Ottawa, right? Ottawa's going to be better, by the way, than they were the other night. That was a bad showing by Ottawa. Yeah. But, you know, I you can't live like that if you're Edmonton. You can't hang your goalie out when your goalie is not built to be hung out that way. You know, your goaltending's not that good. You can't hang it out like that. It's not Carey Price in net saving your butt every single time. So I think they're going to be interesting. I just see Toronto and Montreal – and now Winnipeg just showing me a heck of a lot more than those other teams, but specific to Toronto. And by the way, we're going to have Lindy Ruff on, the New Jersey Devils coach, will be our guest shortly. Specific to Toronto, once again, the narrative is, are the Leafs good enough, right? So it was before, it was, well, they score a lot of goals and they can win the blowout game, but you know what? Are their defense good enough? Can they have the puck enough? All that. Now they're winning close games. They're 6-2 and 0. They're 4-0 and 0 in one goal games. They're 3-1 in games when the opponent scores first. They're finding ways to win. And I'm still seeing the narrative is, are the Leafs, you know, what's wrong with the Leafs? Why is nothing good enough up there? Like, honestly, they're 6-2 and they're finding ways to win close games. To me, they're showing maturity. To me, they're better.
Yeah. Well, nothing is going to be good enough until they win. Right. And that's,
well, no, that's
that, that's the ultimate litmus test. But I'll tell you what scares me about the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I just finished my Super 16 power rankings for you this morning, and I didn't have them very high. I think I had them 9th. They're starting to get hurt already. Their depth is going to be challenged. They got nothing behind Freddie Anderson. And you can't run with a one goalie system in a 56 game playing every other night for 3 months. You know, what are they going to do? They lost Aaron Dell on waivers to the Devils and Lindy Ruff, who we're going to have on in a little bit. And we can ask him about, you know, what he saw in Aaron Dell. But clearly he's a capable NHL backup, which is what you need. So, you know, they have Hutchinson right now. But I don't know if I'm confident in that tandem for an entire season. And then, you know, this team has a reputation of scoring goals, and they're not, you know, they're not as potent as they once were. And maybe that's a product of tightening up in the back end, and they still have game breakers to win those 2-1 games. They have the guys on their side of the ice that are going to score the third goal in a 1-1 game, as opposed to the other team. So maybe they're better, maybe they're more mature, but I need to see more.
Well, I agree with you. I think we all need to see more, and until they do it, we're never going to fully buy in. I think that's just the case with Toronto, but I just look at the way they're playing in close games, to me, shows a maturity about this team right now. For example, Tuesday night, it's, you know, they get a lead, they give it up. Gaudreau scores the power play goal. It's a 3-3 game going into the last 10 minutes of the third period. Marner makes a nice, you know, they make a nice play, quick up. Marner gets the goal. It's 4-3. They kill a penalty late. They win the game by 1. That's a mature win right there for a team. That is a team that's saying to itself, we have a lead now. Okay, we'll do whatever we can to keep this lead. You know, it was a tough penalty because it was a puck over the glass penalty that they had to kill, but they killed it. And it was a good job by them. I just see them. They're winning close games. And I think that can translate to later in the season. One more team, Sean, that I wanted to get to before we get to Lindy Ruff, the Washington Capitals, right? 4-0-3 this season, matches a franchise record for most consecutive games with a point to start the season. Now they were 7-0-0 in 2011-12. So take it for what it is. They still have, you know, three, you know, losses in extra time or a shootout. But 2-0-1 without Alex Ovechkin, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Dmitry Orlov, and Ilya Samsonov, I have been highly impressed with what I have seen from Washington, especially that. But now Eller got hurt and Backstrom got hurt. So you're seeing the attrition here that already teams are facing, but and they're facing it too. But I've just – look, I mean, this is what I kind of expected from a Peter Laviolette team, especially in his early – you know, his first year or two with the team. Team always responds well to Laviolette, but I didn't know that they would be responding the way they have without those four players, and they've responded very well. So I'm very impressed with Washington. I think they are showing themselves to be a true contender this season.
Yeah, and my concern going in was goaltending, right? And that was with Samsonov. And then, yeah, you know, he's out with COVID protocols, and, you know, Vanacek's playing, and he's a rookie, and, you know, one of the better rookies so far in the limited amount of time he's played. But that was my question going in, and I didn't know that they would be this good. And, you know, you mentioned the injuries, Wilson's day-to-day. You know, they've certainly overcome a lot. I'm curious what the long-term impact of all of it's going to be, and as they kind of go along, how they're going to do it. And when you think about teams with windows closing, like Washington's one of them, and I just think about how old they are.
Yeah.
Right? That core's been together forever. And then all of a sudden they say, well, you know what we need? We need to add Zdeno Chara.
Sure. Why not?
You know, right? Because we're not old enough.
Bring our age right? down a little.
And we're not playing a condensed schedule and all those things. We're not doing it. We're doing all those things, but let's add an even older guy. With that said, Zdeno Chara has been unbelievable for them. He's playing like 20 minutes a game. Like, they brought him in and they're like, well, we're going to use him to kill penalties last minute of the game. We'll spot him. We'll protect him. And he was like, you're not going to do any of that. I'm going to play my way into regular rotation. Mm-hmm. And he did. And good for him. And you know, I don't want to get too far ahead, but you want to talk about Juicy.
Oh, yeah.
How about Saturday night?
Saturday night. And then we get Monday. Washington, yeah. Boston, Chara
Saturday
against the
night,
Bruins.
Chara yeah. going against the Bruins. That is going to be fantastic. There's a few moments in the season you've almost come to accept that there's limited fans or no fans in a building. And it's sad that we've almost come to accept that, and that's mm-hmm. our reality, and we live with it. But Saturday night, man, you wish there were people in the building, because yeah, no. it is going to be unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it's going to be good. I will say, before we get to Lindy, we'll get to Lindy in a second. Watching Dallas play with fans in the building, it's just you see the difference, right? I mean, there's only 5,000 fans or so, but you can hear a difference in the broadcast. It feels different. And then talking to some of the, you know, hearing some of the players afterwards of what it was like, you know, that for those 5,000 fans, it felt like a heck of a lot more. They were loud. And they, you know, that first game that they played Friday night, they're chanting Dobie after he got the shutout and all that. It was, oh, can't wait to get them all back. But anyway, Sean, you ready to talk to Lindy Ruff?
Always, man. Yeah. We were talking about coaches and coaches being good communicators. You never walk away from a conversation with Lindy without learning at least one thing.
No, definitely. So let's bring him in. Lindy Ruff, the New Jersey Devils coach. Lindy, how are you?
Doing well, thank you.
So let's talk about this start with your new team here. A lot of people surprised by the start that the Devils are off to. You know, the loss against the Flyers notwithstanding, but are you surprised about the start you're off to? I know it's only a handful of games, but are you surprised from what you've seen from your team so far?
I'm not surprised. You know, we put a lot of work into how we wanted to play. You know, I think we can compete with everybody. I think we've proven that now. We played two real strong games against Boston. We played a poor game against the Island in the Island, but played a real strong game back here again. The Ranger game was a little bit of a split. We were good for a good part of the game, but a little bit on our heels late. And I really felt last night, played a great first period. I had a power play goal go in. they got a little momentum in the second. We took over the second half of the second period, tied the game up, and then we missed two great opportunities at the start of the third. We missed a couple breakaways in the game. We had chances to be difference makers and didn't quite get it done. So I feel when we play well away from the puck, we have a chance to win every night.
Lindy, when you take over a team, right, there's going to be a lot of questions, and a lot of them you can answer relatively quickly. You watch practice and you see if your team has picked up the system, you know, what they look like in transition and everything like that. The one thing you probably don't know, and I would assume that it's even more pronounced this year with COVID and everything else that's going on, is the mental makeup of your team, the chemistry that they have, until you see a couple of games. And, you know, I look at the Devils, and there's been a lot of adversity to overcome early on, right? Corey Crawford retires, McKenzie gets sick and hasn't been able to play. You know, you talked a little bit about Philly being down 2-0. What have you noticed about your team's mental makeup as it's kind of going along, especially because there's so many new elements that you're breaking into the lineup?
Well, the one thing we've talked about is not having excuses, that every team is going to deal with adversity. Every team is going to deal with maybe some COVID protocol. We've had to deal with all of that, as you've mentioned. I've liked our resiliency. I've liked the fact we've been able to battle back. There was no quit in our game. And with probably 8 minutes left in the second, I brought the team over and we talked about the fact that there's some things we just need to do better going the last 8 minutes of that second period. And we can get right back in this game. It starts with one goal. We got that goal. Then we got another one. Came out at the start of the third on our toes, had a couple of great opportunities and didn't convert. So, you know, I like the fact the team had no quit in it, that it we just kept battling. Even when after the empty net, we still went down to the other end and we're still trying to get back in the game. So I'm getting an understanding of the players, their personalities. Yeah, I like what our team has come up with. I really like what our young guys are doing. I like what Jack Hughes, I like his compete. I like his play away from the puck, his attention to play in defense. He's trying real hard to be in the right place. He's trying real hard to win his battles. He's got himself in a really good place to put together a nice year.
And I wanted to bring up Jack with you. I mean, he's a topic of conversation probably in every interview you do, Lindy. But you said something after a game recently where you said Jack is all, I think it was after the might have been after the Ranger game, where you said Jack is better now than you even expected he would be at this point. And I wonder if you could expand on that. What were your realistic expectations for Jack this season? And has he, you know, I mean, it's again only a handful of games, but what has he done to maybe allow you to think bigger for him this season?
Well, for me, it you know, when you look at a young player like Jack last year, and physically it was tough for him in a lot of situations. The fact that he's stronger, he's put himself in good position to, you know, to win more battles, to be involved in more plays, to not get off, knocked off some pucks in 50-50 battles. That's the part that is probably made me smile the most, is that he's put the work in himself to put himself to be in a better position to be just a better all-around player. In anything I've presented him with on a defensive side or a compete side, he wants to get better. And you know, I've talked about the fact I want to put a lot of trust in him, but I want him to trust me also with some of the decisions of when I have him on the ice and what I'm going to ask from him. And he's been up for it. He's had a little bit of penalty killing time. A couple of situations have surprised him defensively where he's gone out for defensive draws. You know, I've asked him to try to get better in the faceoff circle, that he can be one of those guys that we need a left-handed draw late in the period, late in the game, that I want to call your number. And he's been very receptive to trying to get better in those areas so he can become that player that can be counted on, not a player that has to be pulled off the center position and somebody else step in.
I know you weren't there the last couple of years, but I wanted to ask you about Ty Smith, right? For the last couple of years, he's been one of the last cuts for the Devils in camp, and this year clearly he makes the team, and he's made quite the impact since he's come on, you know, points in his first five games. What was it about him as a 20-year-old that convinced you that he could be a difference maker?
Well, what I saw was I saw vision. I saw puck moving ability, which ties into how we wanted to play, the puck possession part of it, leaving the zone. Understanding that, you know, first, any young defenseman has to be able to defend. And the fact that we went through this training camp, a different type of training camp, tried to play a few extra games so myself and our staff could get a better read on how younger players would defend a lot of different situations, including Ty, because we knew that on the offensive side and the puck moving side, it was going to be good, but you have to be able to defend. And I liked a lot about his defending. You know, he's a guy that's going to have to do it by reading, by position, by out-quicking sometimes the opposition. And he's been able to do that. And the fact he's been able to read some plays that are, you know, plays that can change the direction of a game, like odd-numbered situations where he's been able to, you know, stay inside by time, not get himself in bad ice. So there was a lot that I liked going through those four scrimmages that showed me that he could play for us. And as camp went on, he continually got better.
Let's go from a 20-year-old defenseman to a 31-year-old defenseman. PK Subban's playing about 25 minutes a night. What was your philosophy with PK when you took over this team? Because last year his minutes were down, probably around 21, 22 a night. It's only got 1 point for you, but what was your philosophy with PK? What do you think of him?
I really liked his game. You mentioned the minutes. The minutes he's played is because he's played that well. And I'm not worried about the points at all. I think that in order for us to be successful, we're going to have to be good defenders. And PK has really, really stepped up and been predictable with his play. Has made the first pass that's available. He's made the easy plays. He hasn't put himself in a situation that there's a lot of risk in his game. I think if you want him to put more risk and you want him to get more involved, the defending part, we will get hurt on. And I've looked to him to be a really good defender. And I think he's defended as well as anyone on the ice when it comes to our back end. And the ice time that he's got is because he's deserved. It wasn't me setting out to give him 30 minutes or give him 25 minutes. It's the fact that PK has played that well back there that has really given me everything I thought he could give. And I really believe this, that the points will come, that that some of the offense, he's struggled a little bit to get shots through, but I think that part of his game will definitely come.
Lindy, I wanted to ask you about another veteran, and you have a lot of experience as a coach going against him because he's been in the league forever. But that's obviously your first chance to coach him. Travis Zajac's on the verge of playing in his 1,000th game, which is a testimony to any player and how professional they are. But what have you taken away from being around Travis and how he is kind of, you know, the person that makes the Devils go?
He just does everything right. He's just a consummate pro from the way he practices, the way he prepares himself for a game, shift in, shift out. He's a guy that you count on in the penalty killing situations. You count on him in faceoffs. Offensively, he is a good player. He makes smart plays. He can score. He can get around the front of the net. There's a reason you play 1,000 games. For me, he's one of those players that a coach really likes because you trust him in any situation. You can use him in any situation, and he can produce in any situation. So he's one of those guys that a coach automatically can call his number and know what he's going to get.
Now, he's been a New Jersey staple for a long time. There's no question about that. A guy you were hoping would be a staple this season, Corey Crawford, right? So I wanted to take you back to that, understanding that Corey's asked for privacy with the situation. What is it that you could tell us about how that unfolded on your end? Did it take you by surprise? I mean, you clearly were going into the season expecting you to have Crawford and Blackwood, and, you know, the adjustment that it's required of you. Just can you take us through that Corey Crawford saga, if you will?
Well, you know, I think people want to believe there's more to it than there is, but there isn't. Was I surprised? I was totally surprised. I can share this part with you. And in my conversations with them, you know, post finding out that, you know, Corey wanted to do what he did, there's no more to it. He wanted to retire from hockey. And that might seem way too simple, but that's exactly that. It's exactly what it was. And I had some really good conversations with him afterwards. You know, my initial thought was, you know, what can I do to make you change your mind? But he was in a place where that was the decision he wanted to make.
Yeah, I don't assume once you get to that point, there's much changing in the mind. I'm curious, Lindy. So much is different about this year, and as a coach, you know, you always enjoy trying to figure out what coaches are doing and how they're approaching things. With the fact that you play in division for the whole season, does it change what you do, how you prepare? Because I would assume that all of the preparation is a little easier because you essentially have books on every team, right? Like it's not like in the midweek you're playing Anaheim and you have to look at them and be like, who's on this team? Who's on their top power play? Like these are all teams that you know intimately from the last couple of years. Has it made preparation easier?
I believe it has. I think that a lot of what we talk about as coaches now is we have to be really good at what we do, whether that's how we defend, how we play situations. Other teams, I really believe, want to be good at what they do, how they attack, how they defend certain situations. And we've spent almost all training camp and to this point just making sure that we defend a certain way. And I've talked about, I've used a couple of words, just energy and enthusiasm, and I've got that. I don't think you can win games unless your work ethic is really good, that you're not out there standing around thinking. You're ready to react. You're ready to attack. You're ready to take time and ice away. And if we make mistakes because we've gone too hard here or gone too hard there, I can live with those. I don't want indecision. I haven't seen indecision. I think the reason we were able to play right off the bat with a Boston team who was good in both ends of the rink was we were able to match our end of the rink and really in game two dominate the chance sheet from 20 some to low teens for Boston because we were locked into playing really hard in our zone and playing really quick in our zone. And not get caught standing around thinking, does the coach want me to go here? Does the coach want me to go here? And we're going to continue to play that way. But I really feel that our guys know that it starts with how hard we got to work. And if we work that hard, we can take a lot of time. We can take a lot of space away from teams in the defending zone. And then our skill has to take over going the other direction.
And have you seen, Lindy, I mean, you won the second game against Boston. You won the second game against the Islanders. You're going to hope to win the second game against Philadelphia. Have you seen a difference in your team in the second game of those two game sets?
Well, I mean, the Islander game, I didn't like the Islander. I didn't like how we played at all in game one versus the Islanders. If you look at it from a chance standpoint, 8 of the first 9 chances that we gave the Islanders were off the rush. Mm-hmm. They went through us. Barzal went through us. Lee went through us. Bolivier, he went right through us. We gave them space. We gave them time. We didn't get above. So that for me is an easy adjustment. Listen, guys, we weren't a very good team defending. Here's what we need to do. And we came out in game two and we did all we needed to do. And I think we only gave up 1 B rush chance versus breakaways, 2-on-1s, 3-on-2s, in the island. So this Philly game is totally different. The opportunity to win the game was there. If an adjustment needs, we need to be better on, and I've talked about this since the start, we got to be better on special teams. We only had 1 power play. Our power play was good. We didn't score. But again, we gave up a couple power play goals that made the difference in the game. So that is an area that now that we really have to focus in on for game two, that special teams doesn't make the difference.
Lindy, last one for me, and it's kind of a big picture thing. I'm curious, you know, as having spent the last few years as an assistant in New York and, you know, working with a young team, do you think that helped you come into this situation with all the young players that are on the Devils and the fact that the league itself has changed in the last decade? Like we talked a little bit earlier about Ty Smith, you know, 10 years ago, I don't know if a 20-year-old is playing 17 minutes on any team in the NHL. And now it's commonplace when you look across the league. Do you think a little bit of time with the developing team has helped you here?
Definitely. You know, like you've mentioned, I think the age has gotten lower. The players have changed. The players want they don't want to be told every time they've made a mistake. They don't want to be they want you to understand why they did what they did. They want you to listen to them, and I think that's probably the biggest thing. That doesn't mean you have to agree with them, but the ability to listen. The ability to communicate with them, the ability really to take what they're saying and maybe use some of that as their strength. You know, being around the young defensemen in New York, being around Fox, being around Lindgren, you know, some of the young forwards that were on the penalty killing and just communicating with them on a daily basis. Actually, I really enjoyed it. I mean, as a head coach, you don't get as much time as an assistant coach. You know, I was able to spend that extra time. I didn't have media obligations. I didn't have podcasts I had to jump on.
Well, you're glad that's back though.
Yeah. So the short answer you're looking for is yes, it helped me.
Just because you didn't have to jump on a podcast, right?
That's right.
Well, we're happy you were able to jump on this one because, you know, you're back in the ice saddle as an NHL coach. So you get to do these things with us again. How about that? We're happy about that.
Well, and part of that is I still want to take the time to spend time with these younger players too. And it really has been a focus of mine is to make sure I don't get stuck behind a computer or, is that I have that individual communication with all my players.
Well, good stuff. Keep it up so far. It looks great. Lindy, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much. All right.
Well, thanks for having me.
Great stuff there from Lindy and Sean. We didn't get into the story, you know, of the time in Florida. We didn't have to do any of that when, you know, we had a good night with Lindy after a draft and whatnot. We didn't need to do that with Lindy. It was good to just talk to him about the Devils and about the way he sees it going on right now. And they are a surprising team. I didn't expect the New Jersey Devils to be, frankly, I didn't expect the New Jersey Devils to be this competitive at the start.
But this competitive without their best player. Mackenzie Blackwood has been in COVID protocol since the first week.
No Nico Hischier either.
No Nico Hischier, who's out, hopefully coming back soon. But yeah, look, I think, you know, I think Lindy hit it on the head, right? Being competitive is all about mental. And I think especially in this season, you play every other day, right? There's going to be some days. And in the East, it's a little easier, right? Your big trip is to Boston from New Jersey.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's too bad. Vancouver, Ottawa. Yeah. Go talk to them. But still, you know, you make a road trip and, you know, you play and then you play again 2 days later. And the period between those games is not normal. You know, you're isolated. You can't do the things that you're used to doing. So, you know, I think so much of what happens is mental. And I thought Lindy's last answer, you know, about being with the Rangers and being an assistant coach and understanding young players better, you know, is certainly going to help him here. But, you know, I just think he's instilled a work ethic in him that's going to serve them well. How long they're competitive, I don't know, right? One of the questions I asked was, you know, how do you prepare for your division? Cause you know them so well. Mm-hmm. There's going to be tape on the Devils. So
yes. There's going to be tape on Jack Hughes.
Yeah. Every coach is going to know how to break them down. They're going to know, you know, that PK is playing 25 minutes and here's how we go after him. Miles Wood does this and here's how we go after him. Here's how we neutralize him. And it's going to be cat and mouse the whole year because of the familiarity. But, They've certainly outplayed what I think their predictions were.
No question about it. It's still only a handful of games, but they look pretty good. What about the team that Lindy came from, the New York Rangers? It's been a rough go, to say the least. It's been a rough go for them. A lot of one-goal losses. A brutal start against the Islanders. Came back, played great the next game. Hit and miss against the Devils. And then, you know, it's just been – they've had leads in their last three games, two against Pittsburgh, one against Buffalo last night. Haven't been able to hold the lead. Goaltending hasn't been that good. Amazing what happens when you lose a franchise goalie, right? It doesn't just change overnight. You got to just, you know, takes a little while. Lafreniere still doesn't have a point. I'm sure that's an elephant on his shoulder right now. They just, Mika Zibanejad doesn't look, I mean, they just don't seem to be clicking at all. They say they're close and maybe they are in games, but I just don't know how close the Rangers really are to being a team that can bust out of this and go on a hot streak here.
No. And unlike the Devils, there were high expectations.
Higher. No question. Higher. Yes.
Yeah. I would say high. I would say there were high expectations for the Rangers. You know, some of their young talent was coming together. They have arguably one of the best players in the league and Panarin. That's not even arguably. I mean, the arguably would be that he's, you know, top three or wherever you want to put him, but clearly one of the elite players in the league. Their goaltending has not been good. I don't think that Shesterkin has been over 900 in a game yet.
No, it has not been a good start for their goaltending. And Georgiev, you look, he had a nice game against the Rangers, against the Islanders, but it's been a problem. Their goaltending has let them down, but they've also let themselves down in terms of giving up, making that one key mistake or not connecting the pass that can lead to a goal. And that is the difference when you lose one goal games, but I think it's just, it adds up. And again, David Quinn, he's an optimist. He says, we're close. They're close in games. I just don't know how close they are to being a team that can rip off four in a row to get themselves back in this thing. And I honestly, it's six games now. Alexi Lafreniere hasn't scored a goal probably since March in a meaningful game. It's got to be weighing on him. They moved him around a bunch to try to figure out where he could fit best. And now they lost Filip Hedl, who I think it was the center who he could fit best with for 4 to 6 weeks. That's a big loss for the Rangers. Just not a lot of positive vibes that you're feeling coming from there virtually because we don't get to see them in person.
Yeah, no, the Hedl loss is a crusher. But let me throw this little piece of nugget of knowledge at you. Okay. Guess who else didn't score in their first six games as a rookie?
Well, you're going to have to tell me because I don't know.
Steven Stamkos.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's right. That is correct. Yeah. And Barry Melrose was the coach.
Things turned out okay for old Steven Stamkos. Hey,
look,
So, at Jack Hughes, you know, we just talked to Lindy about Jack Hughes. He had a tough go of it last year. I don't know if it was this tough, but it's a huge transition in the best of times. And this kid hasn't had developmental camp. He hasn't had a full training camp. He hasn't had a prospects game. He hasn't had any of those things. And you know what else he hasn't had? He hasn't had the opportunity on the road to walk into a teammate's room and say, I'm lost. Help me out.
Yeah.
Like those conversations that you have with the captains, with the leaders on the team, you know, or that person walks into your room or that person sits next to you at breakfast and says, look, kid, it's going to be okay. Like, you know, let's go out and grab dinner tonight and forget about everything and blow it off. And, you know, we'll see the sights in whatever city we're in. And, you know, I'll show you around a little bit and we're not going to think about hockey. None of that's available. And now, look, I'm not going to put myself in his shoes, but you're pretty much just going to sit in your hotel room or your house when you're at home. You don't know anybody yet. You don't have anything to do. You're going to think about what you haven't done.
Yeah. And at home, he and Keandre Miller, I believe, live together. And they're going through the same thing. Both rookies, first time in the NHL. But look, Lafreniere is going to be fine. He's an elite player. He's going to be fine. They're not struggling because he hasn't scored. That's not the problem that they have right now. But anyway, what about a team that is another one better? Let's go all the way to the other side of the country. The Los Angeles Kings. They're better than I thought. They look good. Their coaching has been excellent. Andre Kopitar's got 10 points. He looks rejuvenated. Maybe the Kings are a team that'll sneak in and get fourth in that division. We were looking at Minnesota or San Jose. Maybe it's LA coming in after St. Louis, Colorado, and Vegas.
Yeah, maybe it is, but Anze Kopitar's got to do that for another 50 games.
Why can't he?
What he's doing. I don't know. He's an elite center. Maybe he can do it. But again, tall ask, older player. But maybe he can do it. But you're looking at a 60 to 65 point season for him, I think, for them to be competitive throughout. And then, you know, you look at it, and Anaheim has the same record, right? Anaheim's leading scorer has 4 points.
Yeah, see, I don't see that at all being sustainable because they're going to lock it down and play these tight type of games, but they're just not going to be able to score their way out of trouble sometimes, whereas I think the Kings can.
Yeah, but they might not need to. Go look at Johnny Gibson's numbers.
John Gibson's a heck of a goaltender.
Nobody ever talks about John Gibson. We did our Vezina tracker at the start of the year. I think John Gibson got 3 votes, maybe.
Right.
And I know one of them, I'm pretty sure, I don't want to lie myself into a corner, but I'm pretty sure one of them was for me. And, you know, somebody else might have had him 4th, so he got 2 points there. But nobody ever talks about John Gibson. He plays for a not very competitive team. He plays on the West Coast. He's got a lot going against him. He's not a demonstrative type of goalie. You don't see him on the highlights, you know, either celebrating or smashing his stick a la Carter Hart the other day, or the Tuukka Rask meltdown.
Smash until it breaks.
Yeah, you don't see that out of him. But let me just tell you this: nobody in the league, except for Koskinen in Edmonton, has faced more shots than John Gibson. Right, he's facing over 30 shots a game, which is unheard of in the NHL these days. Right, and he has a 1.67 goals against average, and he has like a 960 something save percentage. He has been phenomenal, and he has a track record that suggests that he can continue to do it. So if they somehow find an ability to score 2 goals a game, he'll win you a lot of games.
Well, and that's the thing, right? So they lose the opener 5-2 against Vegas. Since then, 2-1 loss, 1-0 win, 3-2 loss, 3-2 loss in overtime, 3-1 win, 1-0 win. I'm sorry. That's asking a heck of a lot from your goalie to do that throughout the course of a season, to play that way when you're giving him zero support. I mean, how many 2-1 games is John Gibson going to be able to win? Anyway, I mean, they're not the team that I think is going to be a team that could sneak up. The Kings
no,
are.
No, no. But my argument was that the Kings have the same exact number, so maybe they're not the team either.
Well, maybe. Let's see. What about Vegas? Vegas looks great. I mean, on the ice, they're terrific. But weird situation, kind of shows the weird year that this is going to be. They have to isolate their coaching staff. And Kelly McCrimmon, who has a lot of coaching experience, let's give it to him. The general manager, he's got to come down on the bench, run the bench, and they bring in the AHL coaching staff. Pays to have your AHL team in market to coach with Kelly McCrimmon against the Blues last night. strange situation. Can't imagine what that must have been like for the players to have the GM coaching them. A little different. A little different than Lou Lamoriello, by the way, wearing his suit pants and his skates. Right? When he was took over the Devils those times that he did. But it's, again, it showcases what a unique year this is going to be, that you're going to have the general manager come down and coach the team with the AHL coaching staff because they have to isolate the coaches because of a potential exposure to COVID.
Yeah. And what a game it was.
Oh, it's
my God. It was one of the most entertaining games so far this year. But I thought the coolest thing was afterwards, right? Like Max Pacioretty was like, nothing against Brad. Like, he did a fine job. We don't really need him. Like, our systems are so set. We know who we are. We know what we do. We know when we get away from it. Like, that, to me, I think that's the beauty of Vegas, right? Is they've instituted over the last couple of years a system that defines who they are. You know, much like the Devils did when they were good back in the 90s. Like, it was plug and play. You put the guys on the ice. They knew where to go. They knew what to do. They knew, you know, here's third man in, here's third forward high, you know, we're winning by a goal, here's what we do, we're losing by a goal, here's what we do. The bench pretty much runs itself. There's an accountability and a culture there that, you know, certainly helps over the long haul. I think you need your coach, but within game, you know, I think you're okay. And like I said, the game itself was just ridiculous. You know, when they came back and you know, they forced overtime, and then let's bottle up that overtime and sell it, right? You want to bring people into the tent, into the NHL tent, the hockey tent, just run that on a loop for a while.
Didn't want it to end, but I understand why it has to. Players will be dead. And I think Dave Gosher, the broadcaster, even said it's not good for broadcasters either if this goes 10 minutes, because I'm not going to have any breath left to call this. But the game, I think it was the game tying goal before we get out of here, the game tying goal for Vegas started behind their own net with Pietrangelo. It touched six sticks in 12 seconds. It was an incredible end-to-end, six sticks, 12 seconds, bang, Max Pacioretty goal. So I think you're right, though. I think, and Max is right, too. I think Vegas, in games like that, can run itself. They need the coach in the long term, but the way they play, their systems that they play, the veteran presence that they have, the experience that they have, how many captains are on that team, it makes a big difference when you get thrown for a loop as they did, but and that's going to happen this season, right? Other teams are going to deal with it. They're going to deal with it again, maybe not that exact situation. And that's where leadership and experience really will come into play.
Yeah. And before we go, let's just stay out west for a minute and let me throw a scary number at you. Colorado played last night. They played San Jose, put up another big crooked number.
Yeah.
Who do you think on that blue line played the most minutes?
Bowen Byram.
That's right. Very good, Dan.
Yes.
21 minutes. Played more. I kind of gave it away with the question.
Yeah.
Played more than McCarr. Played more than Taze. That team, man. When they get it all rolling. Like, I moved them up a spot in the Super 16.
I dropped
Vegas. Vegas is still the team for me. But when you can take a kid in his third game and say, here you go. Go play 22 minutes. Have fun. And produce. Like, it wasn't charity, right? That's the one number out west that really struck me from last night. And here's the other one. Joe Pavelski has 8 points in three games. Seven of them are on the power play.
Well, their power play is 9 for 16. Right, it's ridiculous. Nashville couldn't get out of Dallas fast enough because of that. By the way, the Predators gave up another power play goal to Chicago last night. But Dallas's power play looks great. They're off to a good start. Three wins in a row. Byram playing that many minutes, I think that might have been a product of the score too. Hey, kid, you can, you know, keep going out there every other shift, get your legs under you. They were blowing out the Sharks. But I think what they need to do is the crooked scores are nice, but they need to establish some consistency. And I think they'll get there. Instead of having the seven goals followed by the one, how about having the four goals followed by the four? And they'll win a lot of games in that way. But this was great. I mean, that's what a 13-game night does for you with a 14-game night coming up Thursday. It gives you a lot of hockey to talk about. Remember, we were longing for these days for a while, Sean. So this was fun. Lindy Ruff joining us, and there'll be a lot more hockey to talk about when we get back on next week.
Yeah, I can't wait. And I love that almost all the games tomorrow are going to be repeats of the games
yesterday
and really leave you hungering to follow up on the storylines that we just talked about. So enjoy a light night tonight and then another big meal tomorrow.
Definitely. And everybody stay safe out there.